Let's bow our heads, please. Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for the time that we can have together. Lord, I especially thank you for all the children that you put under our tutelage and care. Lord, I ask that you would help us to open our eyes to see where you would lead us, that you would have us to walk, to realize the influence that we have over these young lives, that it is an impact for a lifetime, not just for the few days that we have them out of the year under our care. And we thank you for this time and pray in Christ's name. Amen. Well, as you can tell when you walked in here, I have a teaching style that's pretty creative. This is how when I used to be in the classroom, how my classroom was, and this is how Veritas Academy, particularly our grammar school, but even in our secondary school, functions today. And we do lots and lots of fun things because I believe that creative teaching is the way to make children love and appreciate learning and make it so that it's something that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. When I first started working with children, I didn't have any of my own children, and I'd always been interested in making children want to love learning, but I really didn't understand the impact of that until I had my own children. When I had to send my children off to school for the first time, we had not been exposed to Christian classical education at that point because that was something that was a brand new word. In fact, when my youngest son went to kindergarten, the book, Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning, was just hitting the market. And when I sent him off to school, it suddenly hit me. My child is going to be spending more time with this person than they are under my care. And as a parent, that was devastating to me. Excuse me, because I realized the influence that that person was going to have. I asked my husband to calculate this out for me, and he calculated it out to about 1,080 hours that these children, if you're teaching in a classroom, are spending under your care. Now, if that doesn't hit you hard, you might be in the wrong profession, because it should. That is a lot of time that you've got with this child. So you need to remember that everything that comes out of your mouth, everything that you do or do not do, is going to impact these children for the rest of your lives. I can remember sitting in a teaching class and, you know, the old adage, you may have the next president of the United States sitting under you, but it's true. But more importantly, you may have somebody sitting under there that's going to be raising 5 or 6 godly young children. And the way they look at their children and the way they teach their children is impacted by how you're teaching them. So when you look at these little people as in that light, it gives you a whole different perspective when you get up in the morning. We spend more time with them than their own parents do. Now, we talk about in loco parentis, and I think that that is very important for us to contemplate. When you're spending more time with a child than their own parents are, those children need to know that, one, you're backing up their parents. Now, obviously, we believe that the parents need to back you up, but that's a whole nother topic. But we need to be respectful of parents and how we talk about them and how we include them in what we're doing. One of the things, and you don't need to look through it, that you're going to find in your packet is an invitation, a set of invitations that you can copy and use in your classroom. And one of the reasons that I have those in there is because sometimes it's really easy to forget. We have a policy at Veritas Academy. Parents are welcome in our classroom all day, every day, anytime the door is open. It doesn't matter what we're doing. Any parent is welcome in our class. Now, Do we have parents there all the time? We're a typical school, of course not. But we do have a lot of parental involvement. But we want parents to know that they are welcome anytime. And how you look at them as a teacher, children pick up on. I've had, you know, young teachers that have, you know, I can tell they're threatened by having a parent in their classroom. It is. You can feel like people are watching you and, you know, are you doing the right thing? But that's not how we need to look at it. We need to look at this like we're partners in this, and you want them in your classroom, and it's a joy to have them there. I always tell our teachers at the beginning of the year, before we have our open house at the beginning of the year, we use Veritas Press History at our school, and so we do lots of these projects. Now, these projects are work, and if you try to do this all on your own, it will kill you. If you're homeschooling, find a friend that is doing this with you and do it together. You could never, without ending up in the hospital, I think, get all this done. But we take all our history and Bible cards. This is what I encourage the parents to do, and make our teachers to do, and make folders for them for the projects they want. And then at the open house, ask for volunteers. Most parents are more than willing to help if they've got enough notice. That's the big thing. They need enough notice. And if you've done your planning, if you've spent time planning your year at the beginning of the year, you know when you need this Trojan horse built. You know when you're going to need 15 metal drum cans. Not easy to round up. Takes a little bit of time. Takes a dad that's got a saw that's going to cut through this metal can. And so what ends up happening is it doesn't get done because we don't plan. So get these things done ahead of time. Put them in folders and hand them out to the parents. And it is unbelievable how the response that you're going to get if you take a little bit of time to plan that out. Give them the instructions and let them know when it's going to be. Now, the other thing that the influence is to realize, you can have more influence than even their peers. You're with them as much as their peers are with them, and you've got influence over their peers. And so how your classroom functions is going to affect how that child views their peers. We like to keep short accounts at our school. I know you've heard that around here a lot, but little sins become big sins in classrooms real quickly when they're not dealt with. And taking the time to deal with it, though, puts it in a whole different light. When we want to look at things in the classroom that are happening, that are disruptive, what we're trying to look for is restoration in that process. What I mean by that, though, is taking the time to care. Rules are great. You have to have discipline in a classroom. But particularly as I see fourth, fifth, and sixth graders moving up, I see one of our fifth and sixth grade teachers sitting in here. And the thing that I see in those years is you can have the rules, and we need the rules, and children need to adhere to the rules. But it's at that point that you've got to take the time to take the group of children out in the hall and talk to them and work through some of these things. That's loving your children. That's being in loco parentis. That's taking the time to show by example that we are going to work through these things. So particularly, I have four sons, so I didn't get the accepted school, didn't have the privilege of having to deal with these young adolescent girls and their little spats that go on at my household. I have a whole different thing. But, taking the time to take these three or four little girls out in the hall as cliques are forming and talking through this and, you know, why we're not going to have this at our school. But all of those things are time consuming. But they're things that if they were at home, hopefully their parents were dealing with. So now you're there in place of their parents. You're setting the atmosphere for this classroom. You've got to love these children enough to say, I do have the time to do this. That's so many times what happens. We're going through our day. We're trying to get our spelling lesson done. We're trying to get literature done. We're trying to get this done. We're trying to get that done. But if we don't take the time to love these children, where they're at and how they are, we're not accomplishing our job. Now, teachers' attitudes. You ever walked into a classroom as a student where you just knew that teacher did not want to be there? I have a vivid memory in my head of a teacher that I had in grammar school, and I have two memories of two grammar school teachers, and one, it was just, you know, I was probably in third or fourth grade, and it was so evident this teacher didn't want to be there. They were there because they needed to be there, but, it, you know, they were going through the motions of doing this. And then I have another memory of a teacher. I loved Egypt, and there's a reason I love studying Egypt. I had a teacher that brought Egypt alive to me and really showed me and helped me understand the correlation between the Old Testament and the ancient Egyptian culture. And I became fascinated by it because this teacher was fascinated by it. So here I am many, 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 many years later, and I still, you know, spend time. If I go to the library, I normally leave with a work of fiction and a book on Egypt. So still to this day, that's the impact that I am talking about to what you can do. One teacher in 1 year helped me get to the point, and I had a mother that loved history, but one teacher in 1 year set my path for life because of how they interested me in a subject. That is an awesome thing to think about. I hope you desire to have young people come back to you when they're grown with their children and say, you know, I remember the Trojan horse, and I've told my children about it. That's the kind of impact that you're looking for as a teacher. What is it that you're doing? And it's going to be different for different people. For some of you, I see a number of gentlemen out there, and some of you may not be as much into the artsy projects, but what is it that you're going to do to grab these children? There is a gentleman in the front row. His name is Michael Leitman, and I still have vivid memories of a time when we taught together. And there was a young man in one of his classes that one night, and I may not have this story exactly correct, but it's close enough. This was a very athletic young man, in about sixth grade at the time. And he was laying on the couch and said to his mother, "Mother, I want to go get Pachelbel's Canon in D." His mother looked at him and said, "Excuse me?" You know, she's thinking this is some new group or something. This child had not been exposed to classical music at home. He said, "Mom, I want to go to the store." You know, and there's a reason this child wanted to do it. It's because Michael made him love music. Classical music. This was a child and a group of children that probably had never listened to classical music, but their teacher loved it so much that now that's what they wanted to listen to. Are you having that kind of impact on your students? What is it that you're using to grab them? I know of another teacher who loves coins, ancient coins. And he would always have them on his desk, and he collected them and would come in. We have an archaeological dig at our school, tried to bring it, just a little bit too cumbersome. But anyway, we set up this dig. We've been ordering artifacts for about the past 6 years from a company, so we actually have real artifacts. And it's set up exactly the way a dig would be, different levels of layers of the earth, and the children go through and do real books, and it's all set up with the plots and the cords and all of those things. And all year we do this dig, and we assemble a museum in the back of a classroom. And the children adore it. I mean, it is so much fun, but they're looking for these artifacts, and each year, you know, the teacher adds a new thing to, and every year it's like, because they've seen the old stuff, like, okay, what is it going to be this year? And they talk about it in the halls of the school at lunchtime. What's the new thing going to be that we get this year to put in the museum? Think of something that you can do that will grab your students. Now, your attitude's going to be known by the view of your students. We all know that there's all kinds of children. We all know that every year you get, well, it's a rare thing that you don't have something known as the difficult child. But I'm going to challenge you here on something. See, those are my favorite kids. The difficult ones are my favorite ones because They're the ones that generally aren't real loved, and they're the ones that generally don't like school, and there's a reason they don't like it, because their teachers have thought they were difficult. I have real strong feelings about this. All children need to behave. They need to live within the structure of the school. But if a child goes through your school and doesn't love learning by the time they get out of there, your school and us, as we as teachers, have failed. Because all children can learn to love learning. But it may not be in the way that we perceive it. There are always those children that don't seem to pay attention. The teachers talk about them at faculty meetings. They talk about them in the hall. They go from second grade to third grade, and, oh, Johnny's coming up, and I've got to have Johnny this year, and what am I going to do with Johnny? And then the next year he gets there, and the next year, and by the time he gets out of your school, guess what? You've labeled this kid so bad that he's never going to succeed. Now, there's a statistic out there, and I could go through it, but the short of it is that I can go down the list, Albert Einstein, Henry Ford, I can go through, you've all heard the list. Those were all those kids. And we need to realize that. And we need to realize that as teachers, it's our job to love all children. And that means taking that child that doesn't seem to be interested in anything. Once again, I'm going to say, they need to sit still, they need to pay attention, they need to be disciplined if they don't do those things. But at the same time, what are you doing? How are you viewing that child? Are you, when you get up in the morning and they don't show up because they're sick, going, phew, my day's going to be easier today? What you ought to be doing is saying, gee, I'm really sorry they're not here. Because that child knows that you don't love them. Children pick up things faster than anything I've ever seen. It's unbelievable. They know how you view them. I have seen more children turned around by a teacher who took the time to care. It's amazing. As I watch difficult children get into secondary school where you've got multiple teachers, it's amazing to watch the difference about how they perform in different classes. And as an administrator, I can tell you a lot of it's because I know the teacher that cares and the teacher that sees that child as a nuisance. Then you've got your just gifted children. And I'll tell you what, I don't know about you, but we always have children. I've always had children in my classroom that I think, oh, goodness, I can't keep up with them. What am I going to do? Just admit it. and look for ways to send them ahead. Give them research projects to do and let them come share with the class. One of the things we're constantly trying to do at our school is figure out ways to take children that really can move ahead and move them ahead. We don't want to just keep them right there in the place that they are because that's easy for us. We want to move them ahead and move them on. Then we've got those children that just seem to always be at the right place at the right time. They're just right on target. They do what they say. They can get lost in the cracks real easy because they're always good. They do their work. They do their thing. You need to make sure you give them special attention also. And then you've got those children, the stragglers, I call them. You know, how do I keep these children up? And as we do this, you know, constantly think of things. One of the things that I like to do in classrooms is set up file folders in the back with each child's name on it, so that I can send them to do extra work. Organization is the key to all teaching, I'm convinced. And I'm one of the most disorganized people you ever meet. So if I can pull this off, you can pull it off. If you have file folders with each child's name in the back of your room, you can do some wonderful things. The children that are struggling, say they need an extra math worksheet, it's in the back of the room. They know. Set up a chart system. If they're younger, do stars. They do their 15 sheets. You know, we have popsicles at our school. We keep, you know, some teachers do popsicles. If you do so many things, you get a popsicle. Might be having lunch with your teacher. I'm real big on that. You know, if they get a reward system, have lunch with your child, with your students. That's a great thing to do. They all, doesn't matter what age they are, see that as a privilege. So you have the struggling student, you can keep worksheets in the back there for them, and at the end of the week, you look back at their work, this is what they're struggling with, go put something in their file folder. Now you've got the gifted child that needs to move ahead, same thing. Find some interesting things in there, particularly math. Go sideways with it. Get the puzzles, the logic puzzles, get them going. And then the child that just does their work, that they're average, maybe that child needs a, can you see, oh, they have a gift in writing. They could write more poetry. Have them doing that. But if you do something to motivate them, like a chart system where they're getting a reward for it, they're eager to go back to the back of the room and grab those sheets. Then you don't have downtime. Downtime in classrooms is where most problems happen. And so set up a system in your classroom where they're motivated to do something when they're finished with their work. Now, you're going to know if you're successful by the feedback you get from your children's parents. At our school, our teachers are required to call our parents on a monthly basis. They have to have a phone call with the parents. And if you get phone calls where you're hearing things like, oh, Johnny was telling us at the dinner table what, you know, wonderful thing he did in class today and how you appreciated this and all, that's great feedback to get. If you're not getting that kind of feedback, you want to think about what you're doing. It's also amazing to see teachers that are loved and appreciated at our school. I get to know that because the younger children want to have them. Oh, I get to have Mrs. Smith this year. They're so excited to move up. And each teacher, I want to make this real clear, though. Each teacher's got to find their own thing to hook a child. Now, you can see that I like art things, and I'm going to talk here a little bit about these things. How to make it interesting. You can do a paper and have children write papers, and they put it there, and they turn them in, and you grade it, and you give it back, and that's great. But you've got to have times where we let these children know that what they're doing is important. So we like contests at our school. We bring in judges and do all these things. But this was at the beginning of third grade, a writing that they did. And what we did was each child did their story. It was on a god or a goddess. And then the teacher laminated them and put them up in the halls, and we had a contest to judge them. Now, do you think they tried harder on this than if they were just turning this in for a grade? Of course they did. This was a big deal to have judged. And so doing those kinds of things is very, very helpful. How many of you all use Saxon Math? Okay. The younger grades have something called the meeting book. If you look over there, you can see this later, but one of our first grade teacher a few years ago took all the information from the meeting book, made a quilt out of it, and hung it up. Now, they sit in a circle around the meeting book, and they do the meeting. For those of you who don't know what the meeting book, it's a calendar and time and weather, and it's this daily exercise that you do. Well, it can get really, really laborious. But now, each child gets to be a helper. And so somebody does the calendar for the day, and somebody does the weather. Well, to get to go up to the quilt from the circle and do this in first grade is a really big deal. And that's a whole lot more fun than the really ugly black and white Saxon worksheet that you've got. Now, this teacher's taken the concept, turned it into a classroom activity that they look forward to every single day. Now, another thing, over here you see this quilt. And this has been an unbelievable story this year. Our third grade class did the quilt that's hanging up there. It raised $1,500 for our school auction. Each child was assigned a different history card. They go through the Veritas Press history cards. And they each did a quilt piece based on the history card, and then they put together a notebook and had to do a write-up on what the history card, what they'd learned. And that quilt, it was raised $1,500 at our school auction. And it was a classroom project. Another thing, studying Greece and Rome this year that some children did was they were all assigned a different idea about Pompeii and Vesuvius. Some children studied volcanoes, some actually did it on Pompeii, and they put display boards together. Once again, we brought in judges and had a contest. We actually blew up Vesuvius. Somebody built a big volcano, and it was just a really fun day. We do Greek Olympics at our school. We have an Egyptian feast every year. We have a medieval feast with dancing, and we have a cowboy roundup and cookout that's really fun. We spend the day over an open fire cooking out. We do anything we can to bring things alive to these children. For you younger children, if you read Miss Nelson is Missing, great to show up dressed like her. It's really, really fun. Coming in a costume one day. When we do Luther, we have a teacher that comes dressed as a monk because we have a Reformation Day party. And so, you know, anything you can do that is going to put something in their mind. Obviously, I've got this large structure over here, Trojan Horse. This actually comes down. It's assembled every year. The children get to build it. And when they're studying the Trojan War, they build the Trojan Horse. And it's a real fun project. Our classrooms are all set in the time period that we study. So somebody said it kind of looks like Disneyland. I don't know that I'd go that far, but it is a little bit like that. When you walk into second grade, you walk through an Egyptian temple, and it's got a pyramid in the room and some sarcophagus, and our third grade room has the Trojan horse in it or an archaeological dig. If you go into our fourth grade room, it looks like you're going into a cathedral. If you go into our fifth and sixth grade room, they're both set. One's a log cabin, and the other one has some things from the Revolutionary War. So getting children to walk down the halls and captivate them, and you can do this anywhere. It doesn't take a lot of money. It just takes some time. Even if you're not in a permanent structure, we built the things around our doorways in the building that we're in now so that they could be moved to another building. They're just tacked up onto the wall with some large screws. I've done them out of cardboard before, if that's what needs to be, because you can't drill into the wall. So any of those kinds of things that you can do to make your classroom a place to be. I knew a teacher once that had a group of third graders and had a reading loft. She had a dad come into her classroom. It was a tiny little classroom. There wasn't a lot of space. And they built a loft, and the children could go up there and read. Now, all of our classrooms have what the children fondly refer to as living rooms in them. How would you like to sit in that little cramped desk all day long? Wouldn't be a whole lot of fun. And we want our school to not just feel like a school, but to also feel partially like a home. And so we have couches, and we do our reading groups around couches in the back of our classroom. We have rugs in them. I'd encourage you to, our things aren't fancy. Our school doesn't have a lot of money. It's amazing what you can get donated. It's amazing what you can go beg for when you go to places. But we set up living rooms, we have coffee tables, we have end tables, we have lamps, and we set up a setting in there that is more like a living room that our children read around. Now, in all this, we have to remember in the grammar stage in particular, how do we get all these things, all these projects in that I like to do, plus get in the drilling, because this is what brings it alive. But you need to teach through this. So I'm constantly looking for tools of memorization. Now, we do something at our school called memory period. Many of you have heard about memory period. The very first 15 minutes of our school day, all our children in 2 through 6 are assembled into one large hall, and we chant for 15 minutes nonstop. I'm not kidding you guys. It is really fun to watch. We've got 60 some odd children in one room rolling off chants. Bible, history, linguistics, states, capitals, countries, math, science. I mean, they are just rolling through the chants. And we found, because we've got to do a lot of chanting in grammar school, it was really hard for our teachers to get everything in during the day. So we found that we put it into a condensed time period that we could get a lot more done. Another thing is looking for poetry that will help you. There's some wonderful books. They're called Modern Rhymes About Ancient Times. Here's one on Tutankhamun. In 1922, in the Valley of the Kings, they found his tomb still hidden and filled with wondrous things. Inside a golden casket with jewels in rich display, the boy King Tutankhamun in silent splendor lay. His face behind a golden mask, gold scepter in his hand, golden bowls and daggers, the world at his command. He died so young, a teenage boy, a name inside a story. Remember now forever in all his regal glory. His name was Tutankhamun, but folks call him King Tut, because Tutankhamun's just too long to say without a cut. And there are just all these great poems that you can memorize with the children, and it really helps them memorize things. Find things that you want your children to memorize and look for poetry out there, because it's there. You just have to look really, really hard. But then it's a great way to get children to write poetry. I see one of our teachers out here, and she loves poetry, and she's gotten the children in fifth and sixth grade, golden mask, gold scepter in his hand, golden bowls and daggers, the world at his command. He died so young, a teenage boy, a name inside a story. Remember now forever in all his regal glory. His name was Tutankhamun, but folks call him King Tut, because Tutankhamun's just too long to say without a cut. And there are just all these great poems that you can memorize with the children, and it really helps them memorize things. find things that you want your children to memorize and look for poetry out there, because it's there. You just have to look really, really hard. But then it's a great way to get children to write poetry. I see one of our teachers out here, and she loves poetry, and she's gotten the children in fifth and sixth grade to write a lot of poetry this year. And it's been really fun because I've watched it trickle down. Now the fourth graders are starting it, and the third graders, because they're watching the older children do it. And once again, it's displayed in the halls. And our teachers are real strategic. You go to lunch and you have a display from another teacher. So they stop and they read it out loud to their children so they can see what older students are doing. It's teaching them to be respectful. It's teaching them to admire what older students are doing. And it's just a fun thing to do. Halls, that's another thing. Halls are a waste of time, generally. Don't make them that way. Chant down your halls. You know, what do you need to learn? Linguistics rules? Are your children not getting their linguistics rules? Do you go to lunch? Okay, that's 3 minutes right there that you just gained. You could tell they weren't getting it that day. Or they weren't getting their multiplication tables. Sing that multiplication song down the hall. Now, our headmaster's wonderful. He's happy to hear noise in the halls. Loves it. Great. Especially if it's that kind of noise. So take that time. Don't lose it. One of the questions I always get is, Laurie, how do you get all this done? It's real simple. You look for every moment of the day that you can get. Our first graders all line up to go to the restroom. And they stand, because our restrooms are at the other end of the hall. So they have to stand out there. It's a normal thing that I go out there and I hear her doing catechism questions with them as they're coming out of the restroom. She has them lined up against the wall. And it's great. It's orderly. What do you think a bunch of first graders are going to do waiting outside the restroom for 10 minutes? It takes a long time to take first graders to the restroom. They're going to poke each other. They're going to get in trouble. Somebody's going to end up in the office. But guess what? By taking the time to do something like that, or she sings songs with them, now they're having fun, they're learning, and nobody's getting in trouble. It's great. Retention. How do we keep all this stuff in their head? That's one of the reasons we do memory period. A good teacher knows that they've got to review what the teacher in the prior years did. If your second grade teacher teaches something and they never hear it again, do you honestly think they're going to remember it? They're not. So you've got to build into your curricular system ways for teachers to review what the other teachers are doing. We're actually in the process right now of developing a test that our sixth graders have to take to graduate from grammar school. And it's a comprehensive exam of everything that they've done in Bible, in history, linguistics rules, grammar rules, basically everything we do in memory period. Because we want to know that they know it and that they're going to keep it. See, my heart's desire is that these songs that they're singing, just like you remember nursery rhymes that you're singing to your children, my heart's desire is that they are going to sing the history and Bible songs and Latin chants to their children. I have friends who have children now who have grandchildren in classical schools. And instead of reading silly books to their children, they were teaching them Latin chants when they were 12, 13, 14 months old. I had a customer not too long ago that called me and said, my 22-month-old is starting to sing your history song. You know, that brought tears to my eyes. What an impact is this kind of education having on generations to come? You know, we can look back and see all the glories of times past, but remember something. That's what you all are doing. You know, we talk about Jonathan Edwards, and we talk about all these people who had this kind of education. Guys, you're educating, whether it's your own children or it's somebody else's child, you all are having that kind of impact because the generations, we didn't get this kind of education, most of us. That's why we're sitting in this room trying to reclaim something. But the children that you're educating are going to have that kind of impact. I hope that when I'm dead and gone, that things are happening because of what we've tried to reclaim. Remember that as you sit in your classroom. Don't get up in the morning and think, oh, I've got all these papers to grade and I've got to do this. Get up and think, boy, what a glorious day, because I don't know what this child is going to be doing. When I think about this, I think, what really kind of impact are we having? You know, we sent three seniors off a year ago. We've had four children graduate from our school. And as I'm listening to them come back now, it's exciting to see how they're thinking. It's amazing. They're asking the right questions. My oldest son was in the process of picking out his research project for, he's in a program that he has to start his PhD research very early. And he called his dad and said, Dad, he's an engineer. So I thought, how hard can this be? We're not going to get into moral dilemmas here. Well, guess what? You're always wrong when you think nothing can happen, because it did. And here he was, as a freshman in college, having to make decisions on some research. He's doing nanotechnology that had to do with medical issues, medical ethics. Now, he didn't have all the answers, but he knew the right questions to ask. I see another young man in the room here who's one of our graduates who is going in the service. He's at Carnegie Mellon. And he asked the right questions about how he has to view his life in the military. He knew the right things to ask. That's what we're looking for. We're impacting the next generation. Now, I've said all this thing, these things. I have till 10:30, I think, right? Yeah, okay. I've said all these things. But one of the things that happens is I hear teachers say, well, Lori, that's just not my thing. You know, I don't want to teach like that. I just want to do it by the book. Well, guess what, guys? You don't have a choice. I mean, you've got to find something that's going to grab these children. You've got to. If you're teaching, whether it's your own children or somebody else's, you've got to find that hook for you. The other thing is, one of the biggest failures that I see for teachers not grabbing kids is being unprepared. Organization takes time. You know, how do we get all these things in? At our school, we are pretty strict about lesson plans. You have to turn in your entire year before school begins. Okay? I need to know what you're teaching every week of the year before we open the door the first day. Okay? And so we have a map that they have, curriculum map they've got to fill out. Now, we're not, you know, if you get off by a week, you know, do we say, you cannot change? Of course not. Things happen. We have snow. I'm from Florida, and I didn't, you know, snow days, I didn't know what to do with those. But anyway, things happen, but that's okay. But when you map out your whole year, you then know, I can start and I can finish. Because do you know what it's like to get a child into your class? You're the fourth grade teacher, and you think they've learned, you know, a particular division. Now you get this child in your class, and the teacher somehow just didn't make it through the book. Well, now your whole year is messed up because you've got to go back and reteach what the teacher didn't teach from the year before you. And so at our school, we really, 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 the administration makes sure that we're on target. Now, do we have things happen? You know, we have years where we have a group of children that might be slow in math, so we've got to calculate things. But if I recalculate it, it means that I know next year what I've got to get to in order to get them through seventh grade. So you really need to pay attention for that. The other thing is just a lack of energy. Teaching requires enthusiasm. Now, there are all different kinds of enthusiasm. I obviously am a pretty type A personality and am, you know, a pretty fun, loud, and boisterous teacher. You can come in my classroom, and I'm not in the classroom anymore, but our headmaster would put it this way. It's organized chaos, meaning I could have five different things going on. The children would be quiet, but everybody might be doing a different thing, okay? We have a kindergarten teacher that never talks above this type of, and you know, she's very, very quiet. Yet she is the most enthusiastic person that I know. Her children love her. So I'm not talking about you have to be like I am, a rah-rah type teacher. You know, when we do chants, we do motions and dance and that kind of thing when I do it. If she's going to do it, they're going to be standing there quietly and doing it. But she is enthusiastic and passionate about it, and the children know it. The last thing I want to say before I open it up for questions is finding those things that will help you, tools that will help you. If you're not creative, there's some people that if they never got a hold of a resource, they could make all these things and come up with all these chants. We have a fourth grade teacher. I didn't know him real well and when he first started teaching, and come to learn that he can write chants just, you know, off the top of his head. It's great. But you need to find resources that will help you. Now, I've tried to provide you with some things, examples of that, in the packet that you have here. There's something called the Book Critic. These are really just some report forms for children to use on books that they're doing. But it's a way, once again, to motivate them, to have fun. If I was doing this, I'd start off the week by probably doing a scavenger hunt and letting them all be detectives, and particularly in the younger grades. And, you know, we're going to be detectives and you're going to be the report critics, or I might do a journalism type thing. Anything to get them to want to really work on what they're doing. One, I told you about the invitation. There's another thing in here, a map on geography. It's really fun. Let each child build a map. There are a number of websites that you can go to get stamps from around the world, and let them, as they're learning their countries, find stamps. Start correspondence. You can contact missions organizations. They're happy to set you up with children that in other countries, particularly at orphanages, that you can write to and correspond with. When you're teaching letter writing and Shirley grammar, you know, it would get really boring to write pretend letters all the time, you know. Teach them how to write the letter, but, you know, expand their world. Find an orphanage. What we did one year was we did a classical school in France. And find, you know, there are a number of places here. Find places that you can contact and have children write letters to. We also have done it where we've had them write letters to the newspaper. That's a fun thing to do. Now, class recipe book. Now, this is really, really fun to do. We study ancient Greece, ancient Rome, and all those things. And in some years, we didn't do this year, but in some years, we've had teachers that have put together, had children research, you know, like Greek recipes. And then they put a classroom book together. Guys, it's another great fundraiser if you do an auction. You put the cookbook together, and then you say that your class will prepare a meal for a family, for the people that are there. It's a great thing to do. You can keep going through this. You're going to see, well, I gave you some display things for them to write on. Once again, you know, if they just write a paper, it's not as fun. But if you pick things periodically that you're going to display, there's some great ways to do that here. Before I open it up with questions, I'm just going to end with, you know, find that thing that you're going to use to hook your students. Find out what it is. Do you love Shakespeare? We had a teacher who, I have a son who does a lot of acting, and he does a lot of acting because his fourth grade teacher loved Shakespeare. And they put on Macbeth, not a children's version, Macbeth in fourth grade. And it was unbelievable, and he's been on the stage and performing since. But there was a teacher, I mean, that's what he wants to do with the rest of his life now. A teacher did that and gave him something. He reads Shakespeare for fun. It's a great thing to think. And I can look back as a parent and point to that teacher, it happens to be our headmaster's wife, and say, my child has a passion that you gave him many years ago when he was a little boy. What is that going to be for you? Find the hook and work with it. Thank you. Now, if you have questions, I'm happy to try to answer them. Questions? Yes. 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 Okay. Right. During our memory period, do we do it by grade? No, we don't. Everybody does it together. And what happens then is, children get to review the things they've learned in the past. Quiet group. Yes, in the back. Oh, it's called Modern Rhymes for Ancient Times. We do. Okay, any other questions? Yes. Yes. We're in our cafeteria, and we're lined up by classes, and we have an overhead that we use that tells the children what's coming next. So we'll start off and we'll sing the history song. Then we'll do the Bible chant. Then we'll do three Shirley Grammar chants. We'll do Latin declensions. We'll do whatever it else may be, a science chant, whatever we're memorizing, and we just go through that basically for 15 minutes. Everybody does the same thing all at one time. Right. That's correct, but they're doing everything. We use that as a review time and a time to get them prepared for later years. So our second graders are chanting things in Latin that they will never get to for 2 years, but they memorize it. So then it's much easier on the Latin teacher or the grammar teacher when they get a hold of the children because they already know the chants. No, we're just we have a rotating basis. We rotate it through. We cover all the history songs, all the Bible. We have the catechism, Westminster Shorter Catechism, broken to a 3-year cycle. So, other questions? Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Our geometry teacher does some applied mathematics things at that point. So they might be, I know in trigonometry they built a bridge this year, and her name is Beverly Butt, and you could ask her, but they do lots of projects like that. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.